Welcome to this summer solstice edition of Chiefs Live. Mitch Holtis with you, voice of the Chiefs, along with the snapper, Kendall Gammon, 15-year NFL veteran and Pro Bowl long snapper. So here we go. This will be our final show for about a month before we crank things up at training camp, and we got to kind of shut the engines down so we get everything ready so that you will know everything that's going on at camp, because we'll have daily shows from St. Joe. But it was released just this week, Andy Reid's plan going into St. Joe. And what do you think when you saw the schedule? 8:15 practices every morning that'll be open to the public. And here we go. What do you see here?
Well, you're exactly right. When you talk about the 8:15 a.m. practices, we'll get into that. But as you see, the 22nd, the rookies and QBs report. And remembering back in 92 when I reported as a rookie, it's kind of important when the vets aren't there and you can get accustomed to things a little bit without everybody going on, because it is an adjustment. Trust me, I don't care how seasoned of veteran you were in college and where you played, how big of the program was, it's not the NFL. But, you know, Mitch, getting back to the 8:15 a.m. practice, I think that's the one thing that's caught a lot of people, I don't know by surprise, but just the fact that it's a little bit different. I, as a player, I like that a lot, because you get up, you get that breakfast in your belly, you're ready to take on the day. And I always preferred the morning practices. Now, back when I played under a few coaches, those morning practices were at 7 a.m. I didn't like that so much, but I think 8:15 is a nice time to do it. And certainly the weather can be a factor as well.
The first practice will be at 3:30. You saw that on our slate. That'll be open to the public. And then the 8:15 practices from there on will also be open to the public. Family Fun Day will be on Saturday, August 3rd at 8:15. That means it's breakfast with the Chiefs on that weekend. And then you see the first preseason game on the road at New Orleans. The Chiefs then open at home against San Francisco on the 16th on that Friday. So it's an adjustment for the fans. It's going to be getting some days off work,
right,
to get to St. Joe. And so many fans love to come to St. Joe to watch the Chiefs. It's fabulous. The location, the accessibility to the fans. And I sense that there could be a flu epidemic about that time, about 2 weeks. I could see just something going on where a lot of people missing work. You just got to,
I'm not feeling so good today. That may happen. But you know what? If it's to go out and support your Chiefs, then I'm all for it.
Well, and Ferris Bueller will be there, I'm sure.
Certainly.
80s movies reference.
It's hard to believe this offseason, so much has went on. You go back to January 7th when the change started, and now we're some 50 days away from the first preseason game, 79 days away from the first regular season game down in Jacksonville. It has been one of the most, to me, talked about off seasons ever, having been around the Chiefs, as so much has went on.
Well, a complete different vibe here with this football team, and we've mentioned that since the first week of January with Andy Reid coming as head coach and John Dorsey as general manager, and both directly reporting to Clark Kent. That might be the biggest story.
Right.
Everything kind of spins off that. But let's talk about the approach to training camp. As a player, I just sense Andy Reid is going to have a challenging training camp, as much as you can with the new collective bargaining agreement rules. But having the 8:15 time slot, recovery time, then you get recovery time. They'll have some walkthroughs in the afternoon that won't be open to the public, some. But what about the recovery time, meeting time, rest time to get you ready then to go again at 8:15 the next day?
Well, it's huge. And as you watch some practices from the OTAs right there, it's going to get dialed up so much more, Mitch, as you know, in all the camps that you've been to. And I fully expect for it to be a very, very taxing training camp, as much as you can under CBA rules. And the fact is, you're coming in as a new coach. You want to set a style of how you're going to do things. I think Coach Reid will be in that. But the other thing I think is, when you stress guys in the preseason, in the camp, you want to know how they think when they're tired and they get fatigued. You want to know how they're going to perform under pressure. And to me, how you do that is you have hard, grueling practices and you get into their minds so they've really got to react. You want it to be unconscious. I think the rest time until the next day is huge for them. I think also, if you're going to have those grueling practices, and I think there will be a lot of them, and it should be very, very interesting, the fact that it's in the morning and you won't see those high temperatures, hopefully that will be good for the players as well.
It'll somewhat assimilate a regular season in the fact that you'll have, you know, there'll be a lot of hard hitting in these practices, but how do you react when you're sore? How do you react when, this is very different than OTAs in minicamp. You see here all this video and nobody's wearing pads.
Right.
When the pads come on, you hit, and then how do you react to that with the bumps and bruises? And you want to see the toughness and who handles it. Now, One thing that's been apparent through all of the mini camps and OTAs is the tempo that has been set by Andy Reid and his staff. This is a fast-tempoed practice, not a lot of walking around, setting around. It is move, 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 move. Now, I think the reaction, and Andy Reid kind of alluded to it last week in the visit I had with him on Chiefs Live, was he wants to see how all that move, move, tempo, how do you handle it in the classroom when you are sore, when you are tired, the sixth or seventh session into practice. What about that as a player and the challenges that you have physically, but not just physically, but how that leads to mental and emotional challenges?
Well, I think the big thing as a player when you get into the NFL in my 15 years is you've got to understand not just when you're on the field, you're always being evaluated, Mitch, and how you deal with things. You know, talk about being a professional. And being professional just isn't 2 hours on the field each day or 3 hours on Sunday. It's how you prepare. It's how you take care of your body. It's how you live your daily life. It really makes a difference. And it's not football, but it is football because you've got a long 17-week season. Of course, you get the one bye. It's huge. You have to be prepared to take it as a pro. It is a job now. Certainly it's a game, but it is still a job for these guys that come back or come out of college, and they've got to understand that. So again, mentally, physically, you tax them as much as possible, and you see how they react because you want to know how they're going to react when the bullets are flying.
Yeah, very interesting. I want to ask you about this rookie class because we're all excited about them. And throughout this spring and the early part of the summer, you saw Fisher at right tackle. You saw how Niall Davis could really help this team. You saw how Travis Kelce could really help this team. Nico Johnson, perhaps. Sanders Cummings going on right on down through the draft class. As a rookie, you've already kind of alluded to it, but now as a rookie, and these guys played all over the map as far as what level and what conferences they were in Division I, or in some cases, like an Eric Kush, Division II. How does camp challenge a rookie in ways that they have never been challenged before?
You know, mentally it really gets to you. I know my first camp in 92 with the Steelers, it doesn't matter who you are. If you came into the NFL, you were most likely a top echelon leader in college, and now you're back on the totem pole, and now they don't use your name. It's, what's up, big guy? How you doing, champ? I mean, they don't know your name, and that's part of it. And even if they do know your name, Mitch, they're probably not going to say it. They want to see how you react with things. So you've got to understand that now respect is earned. It's not given. And so you've got to go to camp, and you've got to go do that. I remember, for me, that first thing was having Greg Lloyd come at me after a play and going after me. And I'm just like, you know what? I really do not want to fight Greg Lloyd, but I've got to. And so we went after each other for a while. And I didn't win, but I didn't lose. And the fact is, you're fighting for that respect. It's huge. It's different. It is not college anymore. There are no limits in terms of 20 hours a week. You only got so much on-field time, but you can prepare as much as you want. And that makes the difference in my mind.
And there's always the NFL enduring terms of endearment. Hey, 65. When you hear, hey, 61 or 65, you're going, wait a minute. You know my name. But you'll hear that throughout training camp. And I don't care if it's Eric Fisher. Hey, 72.
72. I mean, here's my pads and my helmet. They're right over there. Go get them. And I'm thinking like now or before now.
So it's always just a, well, wait a minute, I'm not a name, I'm a name, not a number. Nope, not a training camp.
Not so much.
So it'll be exciting, and St. Joe, of course, is a fabulous venue for this camp. And then you mentioned off the field and how you handle meetings, how you handle dealing now with the guys, because you're all in the dorm together. Mm-hmm. And some guys can handle that and some guys can't. I mean, it's taking you away off this facility, getting you detached. And some teams can build with that, or some teams, let's be honest, it can be fractured. Or a little tussle on the field between offense and defense, or two players, if it's Greg Lloyd in your case. Now you're going to eat with Greg Lloyd.
Right.
Now you're going to be down the hallway from Greg Lloyd. Mm-hmm. What about those challenges emotionally?
You have to understand that as in the NFL, what happens on the field, you've got to leave it out on the field. And once you're in the locker room, you're still on the same team. That's the one mantra I heard from all the coaches I played for is it's still one team. That's why you like to get out and hit somebody differently in preseason. But it is huge in terms of being in the dorm, dealing with a lot of people being around, a little bit noisier. You need to get your rest in the afternoons. Normally, most guys are going to have a chance to get an hour and a half nap. You want to do that. Some of the other things that I think maybe the fans don't realize is when you work out hard and you're fatigued and whatever, lots of times you lose your appetite, and you've got to actually force food down sometimes to keep your weight up. You've got to keep your fluids up. If you don't, then you start to cramp up. And the fact is, if you're not on the field to perform, it doesn't matter how good you are. If you're not out there, you can't play. So you've got to make sure and take care of this body that got you to the level you're at now.
Interesting, we just saw some video of Dwayne Bowe. Of course, he missed St. Joe last year. This will be a very important camp for him, particularly in this new system of Andy Reid and offensive coordinator Doug Peterson. But I'm asking about leadership because we also saw a video of Alex Smith. Leaders in camp. Now, there's the joking around and kidding the rookies and carrying the pads and the singing night and that kind of stuff. But what about your leaders of your football team and how they lead and direct a team through camp? But let's say an Alex Smith, his first camp as a Chief.
Well, right off the bat, as a QB, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're the QB, you're the quote-unquote leader of the team. That's what they're looking at. Now, you may or may not fit into that position, but everything that I've seen from Alex Smith is this is a guy who was born to play QB. He does it at a high level. When you talk about what's said about him and the coaches and how they see him, the one thing that keeps coming up is the football acumen, how well he understands the game, how much he loves the game, how he's into it almost 24 hours a day. Have to actually shoo him out of the rooms because they do have some rules. You can only be here so long. And the fact is, this for him, I think, is an opportunity that he relishes, that he was ready for. And to a man, the people that I've talked to, they see Alex as their leader. This is a guy that they feel like is doing some good things. Again, back to the coaches to end it, is they talk about the good decisions he makes and how well he understands the game. Because, Mitch, as you know, it's his job to assess the defense, get the ball to the playmakers on time and where it needs to be so they can go make plays.
One of these days, I'm actually going to have a clicker and try to count how many throws quarterbacks make during training camp. They throw at the beginning when receiver routes. They throw 7-on-7. They throw in teamwork. I mean, there are thousands of throws in those arms throughout camp. You always hear the dead camp arm.
Right.
I'm curious to see Alex when he gets into that third week and how things go, not only for him, but also for Chase Daley and right on down the line, Stansy and Tyler Bray.
And you bring that up, and we talked about it a little bit earlier in terms of taking care of your body. After every practice, you're going to see that shoulder. You're going to see that elbow. They're going to be in ice. You're going to get therapy. You're going to stretch because you're exactly right. You throw thousands of balls. It takes a toll.
It certainly does, and I don't care what quarterback you are. Now, speaking of quarterbacks, we're going to check with the enemies in the AFC West. It is time now, as we get ready to go to St. Joe in camp on this edition of Chiefs Live, to check in with what faces the Chiefs in the AFC West. There are some interesting notes and things to think about. We'll have that when we return on this summer solstice edition of Chiefs Live.
Love the Chiefs? Join us. Stay connected and join the growing communities of the Chiefs Kingdom. There's so many ways. Twitter keeps you up to date on all things Chiefs.
Eric Johnson on a linebacker blitz.
Facebook lets you respond and react to fellow fans. And Instagram takes you inside with some of the best images of the kingdom. Stay connected to win some sweet prizes. Join in and be a part of your Chiefs 365.
Welcome back to this final edition of Chiefs Live before training camp. Mitch Holtz is with you along with Kendall Gammon. It's now time to check in on the other three teams in the division. The NFL is unique in their division setup because that's where everything starts. You not only try to build your team, but you study what those other three are doing. 4 points of a star all want to annihilate each other, basically. What are you seeing overall in the AFC West? Because the pundits think, some think this is the weakest division in the National Football League.
You know what, I think you can look at maybe an Oakland and a San Diego that are in a little bit of turmoil as not being very strong. And if you want to look at what the Chiefs were last year, you can make that case. But that being said, a lot of people are talking about the Chiefs and the offseason moves they've made. But you look at Denver, we talked about it off air, the fact that Denver, if it's not for somebody who doesn't backpedal and misjudges a ball and Baltimore goes on to win it, they you you could be looking at maybe the best team in the NFL. So they are certainly a team on the move. As you see right there, they bring in this year with Wes Welker, Sean Phillips, Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, which, of course, Coach Reed is familiar with from Philadelphia. Those are some guys that can make some difference. When you look at Peyton Manning, a pretty big get to get Wes Welker out of New England.
Here's what's unique as you look at this page. The Chiefs do not play the Broncos until November the 17th. Then they play them December 1st. Now, planets can realign in the time from September to start the season to week 11. You have no idea what's going to happen in this league. There'll be 15 twists and turns, not only the Chiefs season, but also to the Broncos season. What's apparent from Denver, Peyton Manning is 37. A guy like Champ Bailey is 35. They are playing for the now moment. When you look at their acquisitions in the offseason, Sean Phillips is near the end of his career. They have made moves, picking up guys. They even signed Quentin Jammer from San Diego. Their moves, for the most part in the offseason, have been the here and now. Those two kneel downs against Baltimore, to me, were the most intriguing plays of the offseason. Because what does Denver have in dealing with a Peyton Manning and all those surgeries? And does he have it in guys that are – this team is full of veterans.
Right. You're right. And I look at that. They bring over Vasquez from San Diego to help shore up the offensive line. And, again, this is a team that, like you say, is playing for the here and now. And I understand that to a degree, but you wonder whether they're mortgaging the future. I certainly hope they are. But they also get Terrence Knighton out of Jacksonville. He's done a great job there. I think that helps them. That's something that you're going to have to deal with. And then also with their number one pick, Sylvester Williams out of North Carolina, the defensive tackle at 6'3", 320 pounds roughly. Now you're seeing a defense that's starting to shore itself up a little bit as well. But it'll be interesting. You look at right there with Monty Ball, the running back out of Wisconsin, taken in the second round this year. Then, of course, the running back that was taken in the third round last year, it is Ronnie Brown, yeah, sorry. So they are very aware of the fact that they've got to get that running game going for Peyton Manning, and I certainly think that is something that if the running game gets going even more so, then you've got more problems out of Denver. That being said, when it comes down to Denver is going to throw the ball a lot, and I think case in point, you talked about preparing for the teams in your division, when you go sign Sean Smith, Dante Robinson, and do some things like the Chiefs did on defense this year in the offseason, I think that is directly aimed at not only getting better, but being able to combat that three wides that you're going to see so much out of Denver.
12 of the 17 games last year for the Broncos, they scored 30 points or more. You're going to have to score, but a lot of the moves that the Chiefs made in the offseason seems to me targeted to try to handle these guys. Now, let's put the rookie page back up. You mentioned Terrence Knighton, a big defensive lineman that played for Jack Del Rio, the Broncos defensive coordinator. Sylvester Williams was their number one draft pick, a kid from Jeff City, Missouri. We talk about the Jayhawk JUCO lead a lot. This kid's life was made basically at Coffeyville Community College here in the Chiefs Kingdom in Kansas. Then he turns into a star at North Carolina. But now they have kind of two giant defensive linemen in there with Knighton and Williams.
Yeah, and that's an issue because if those guys can control the middle like they hope they can do, certainly, then you can let those guys on the outside go nuts. And while they did lose Doomerville because he can't tell time, they've still
Fax
got
machines.
Exactly right. They've still got some guys that can come off the edge and do some damage. And if they can do that and know that the run game inside is taken care of a little bit from stopping it, then that can spell trouble for Denver Broncos opponents.
Let me throw in another guy here that people do not talk about when they talk about the Broncos, and that's Trindon Holliday, the returner. The only guy in NFL history in a playoff game to have a punt return, kickoff return for a touchdown. Chiefs saw this guy in the flesh. You're also going to have to deal with some pretty good teams and an electric punt and kick returner in Trindon Holliday.
Well, and make no mistake, Dave Tobe, the new special teams coach that came here from Chicago, is well aware of that. And special teams, Mitch, makes such a difference when you talk about the field position for both the offense and the defense, and it's something that has to be there week in and week out. O&D is going to ebb and flow a little bit back and forth, but the backbone has to be special teams. That's when the O&D guys come together and they play together on that side of it, and it is something that is going to be very, very telling for the Chiefs this year, I believe.
All right, let's switch now, because if the AFC West is the weakest division in the NFL, as some say, than is the strongest team in the NFL in this division in the Denver Broncos. Again, the Chiefs do not see them until almost Thanksgiving. Crazy. Here's San Diego. Let's take a look at the Chargers now, because this team, 7-9 a year ago, redoes everything. New GM for the San Diego Chargers in Tom Telesco. New coach in Mike McCoy. The Broncos, quarterback coach and offensive coordinator. What do you see, feel, think, taste about the Chargers?
You know what, Freeney, you know what he can do in Indianapolis so long, but he was in the 4-3 for so long, and then last year Indy went to the 3-4. His production dropped. Of course, that's what San Diego runs as well, so we'll see how that works out. Max Starks, they needed a left tackle. He comes over from the Steelers. He's certainly solid, has played in 3 Super Bowls, won 2 of those, so you've got a quality veteran that can help out. Now, the other guy that I think is interesting, and you see that with the acquisitions, is Danny Woodhead. And to me, this is he good? Yeah, he had 7 touchdowns last year. He had 40 receptions for 446 yards. But to me, this is them trying to rekindle the fact that they made a mistake in letting our own Kansas City product in Darren Sproles go. And he is no Darren Sproles. Now, I think he can help Eric. Philip Rivers out, because Philip likes to throw 2 backs out of the backfield and things like that. So that's where I see them trying to go with this. But what I see also, while they're in the first year of a new coach, it's also kind of, to me, the last ditch efforts to still win with Philip Rivers, because he's starting to get to that time. I personally think the skills are going for him. So that is going to be interesting. I don't know. This is a team that I think is in transition, and you're going to see it reflected in their record this year.
Strongest part of this team, in my opinion, is what you're seeing here. Their front 7 defensively. Donald Butler, a young linebacker, and you see him right here just chasing around the edge. 56 is a stud. And Corey Legit, a defensive end for these guys. That's where the strength of this team will be. Now, you mentioned Rivers and throwing to the backs. Okay, this is the thesis.
I'm the king of segues.
Four of the last 5 years, Philip Rivers has led the National Football League in throwing to his running backs. For the last 5 years, somewhere between 35 and 39% of his throws. Well, his best years, when he was rolling up the stats, it was to Sproles. Mm-hmm. Guys would turn and deal with engaged. You got to respect the wide receivers. He would dump it to Sproles. Sproles, as we all know, jitterbugs his way down for 50 yards. Now it's 1-for-1 for 50 yards. That does a lot for your passing stats. Danny Woodhead, they're hoping, or Ryan Matthews, who had 2 broken clavicles last year, becomes Sproles. That is a giant issue for these guys. But I do know this one thing. They are solid at that defensive front 7. The other issue is turnovers. Rivers had 49 turnovers the last 2 years. He's had 35 picks that he's thrown. That's 4th most in the National Football League. The turnovers have been dramatic for the Chargers the last 2 years.
Well, Philip Rivers, it's almost inexplicable in terms of some of the moves he tries to make and some of the things he does. Of course, you can go back to the game here when the game's all but over and he's like, no, I can fumble it for you and you can have it and we'll let you score and win. So, I mean, it's interesting some of the things he does, but you know what, as you look at that stat right there, some of the guys they lose in Phillips, Barnes, and Ingram. Ingram is huge because a former first-round pick, it was going to add some pop to the defense, I believe. But, you know, getting back to the offense and Rivers, I think Keenan Allen coming in as a wide receiver being drafted is huge. He's out of Cal. And then, of course, DJ Fluker, the big, huge offensive tackle out of Alabama. So now they feel like their offensive tackle situation is taken care of with bringing Starks over here. So it will be interesting how they perform on offense. And, of course, getting back to what you talked about, a defense and their strength with Manti Te'o and what he does, that will be interesting to see as well.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to. I mean, he's going to be flanked there by Butler. That's going to help him a lot. And a really good defensive front 4. Fluker on the right side. The key will be the left tackle. You mentioned Starks. They also signed, this is where it gets close to home, they signed the former Andy Reid tackle and King Dunlap. But both Dunlap and Starks have had some injury issues.
Certainly.
So we'll see how that goes. But I do like Keenan Allen, their pick out of Cal. They got him with a good value pick. And with a wide receiver core that seems to be in flux, Keenan Allen could be. He's not a speed guy, but appears to be a really good route runner. And if you don't think you don't see the Broncos till almost Thanksgiving, you don't see the Chargers until Thanksgiving. Pop that graphic back up again. Weeks 12 and 17. You don't see the Chargers until November the 24th and December the 29th. I mean, there have been entire civilizations that have lasted longer and the time the Chiefs have until they play the Chargers. A lot of stuff's going to happen before San Diego and Kansas City meet on the field.
You're exactly right. And one more thing before we move on to Oakland is the fact of one guy who I think is a key addition, and I think it's good for the Chiefs, is the fact of Chris Cluey comes over from Minnesota. And this is a punter who drives the ball. He outkicks his coverage. And I think Dave Tobe will recognize that, and they will take advantage of it, and you'll have a chance to create some good field position. I like that move for the Chiefs in terms of what San Diego picked up.
All right, you mentioned Oakland. You're the king of the segues, so here we go. Let's check in with the Raiders, and some think the Raiders will struggle this year. Here's where you start with Oakland. $50 million of dead cap space. That's the general feeling because of past sins, let's just put it that way, and transgression. So Oakland in a state of flux. Dennis Allen in his second year. Reggie McKenzie is his second year's GM. He worked with John Dorsey in Green Bay for a long, long time. Some think this team is 32nd in the league among 32 teams. What do you see in Oakland?
You know what? I don't know that I can argue that at all. I think they're in a state of flux. I talked about earlier with Denver possibly mortgaging the future. I think that's what you saw with Oakland trying to do some quick fixes. Certainly Carson Palmer didn't help them any in the side of the situation cap-wise. But, you know, they go back. Woodson's back there now. And they get Flynn as a QB. And I think I'm probably maybe not bigger, but as important as the fact that Tracy Porter comes over from Denver. Certainly something they needed to get, because in years past, I felt like they did have some good corners, but they've let them go for whatever reason. So, again, I think it's a team that doesn't know what their identity is yet, and it's going to take a while to find out. But that being said, as a Chief, anytime you go into Oakland, it doesn't matter what's going on. It's always a tough game. But again, you mentioned it. You're not going to see them until, I guess you'll see them week 6, but then not again until week 15. Those are the games you have to win if you want to win the division, quite honestly, Mitch.
Well, here's what drives me crazy and causes sleepless nights. The Raiders have gone 10 years without a playoff berth. That doesn't cause me missed time sleeping. What does is the fact that Oakland, they have gone 10 years without making the playoffs, are 8-4 against the Chiefs, and have won 6 straight games at Arrowhead Stadium. That now causes me insomnia.
That speaks to the fact of it's the Raiders, it's the Chiefs, it's the division, the rivalry. It's never mattered. I go back to my 7 years with the Chiefs. It never mattered the record for the most part. Those teams, for whatever, conjure something up one way or the other to play up to the other team's level, even if they're playing better.
No Richard Seymour. He's gone. No Tommy Kelly. They released him. Their front seven has been totally redone, basically.
Right.
They got Lamar Houston. They're redoing their whole defense.
Well, and you talk about Kelly. I'm glad he's gone. You had nightmares of seeing Tommy Kelly all the time.
Didn't block him for 5 years.
I think an interesting one is Shane Leckler being gone as well, driving the ball all over the place. He's been a stalwart, a perennial Pro Bowler there with Oakland. That was perennial up until this year when Mr. Dustin Colquitt went. But Darius Haywood-Bey leaves as well for Indy. Those are some guys, those are some weapons that they do not have anymore, and I'm certainly not losing any sleep about that.
The one guy we haven't mentioned becomes the focal point for the Raiders' season. They're going to go, instead of a zone running game, they want to go to a straight-ahead running game, Darren McFadden, the running back who has hurt the Chiefs in the past. However, in 5 years, he's missed 23 games because of injury. He has never played more than 13 games in a single season. That's where the Raiders are putting a lot of their chips on the table, try to protect Matt Flynn, run the ball in a power game. They do have Jared Veld here, who I like at left tackle, out of Hillsdale College, one of your Division II guys. McFadden, though, becomes a giant key for them. Can he stay healthy, and can they develop a power running game?
Well, you know what? If they're going to develop a running game, it's going to be because he stays healthy, because the facts are the facts, which is he hasn't stayed healthy. When he's on the field, Mitch, he's electric, but almost 29 yards a game rushing, 28th in the NFL, that's putrid. That is simply awful. And that, for Oakland, is not going to get it done. I certainly hope it stays that way. But if they want to have any success, we all know in the NFL, you've got to run the ball with some effectiveness. Even if you want to pass the ball, it helps set it up.
Well, one thing that we're excited about with the Kansas City Chiefs is a great linebacking core that's going to have to stop all three of these teams that we've just previewed. And there's been some discussion that former Packers linebacker Desmond Bishop is being talked to by the Chiefs, as well as some other teams. But if Bishop becomes part of the Chiefs, and again, it's just speculation, but this linebacking core now, man, you get excited when you start to look at a young Nico Johnson, Akeem Jordan coming over from Philadelphia. We already know what Justin Houston and Tom Bahale and Derek Johnson can do. How good could the linebacking core be overall, even if they had a Desmond Bishop?
Well, certainly with Green Bay releasing him, nobody would know him any better here than John Dorsey, so it would make sense. Again, we're just speculating, but it would make sense that at least they're looking at him. If that were the case, yeah, now the linebacking core becomes a little bit of a strength, and we all know the defensive backfield this year was shored up with Robinson and Smith coming over and doing some things there where I felt like it has a chance to be one of the best in the NFL. Well, if you can couple that with a great linebacking core as well, now you not only have good linebackers, but Mitch, you know this as much as anybody, is the fact that now those other guys that are behind them, they can really be your four core guys on special teams, which is so important, and you've just upgraded the athleticism of the team.
And we're looking at Bob Sutton in the middle of this Chiefs defense, leading the way. What I've been able to see this spring and summer, we talked with Andy Reid about it last week, is the fact that I see tons of aggression from this defense. A lot of Jim Johnson stuff when Andy Reid had him as defensive coordinator in Philadelphia. They're coming from all points. They're going to create some big plays.
Well, you're right about that. And, folks, if you haven't had a chance to watch last week's edition where Mitch interviewed with Coach Reid, I thought it was very telling when he talked about the defense in terms of you're trying to bring guys to the QB and get home before they can do anything. In terms of you're basically trying to overlay load one side, mm-hmm. trick them to a degree to where they just can't pick it up, and you get to the quarterback before he has a chance to identify where the open guy is. Because there's going to be somebody open to a degree. You got somebody there to back him up. It becomes a cat-and-mouse game, and can I get there before you have a chance to identify? I love that in a defense. To me, that goes back to my days when I was with the Steelers and how they ran things. You just try to trick them a little bit to a degree, but you're physical and you come after them and you create havoc. I like that. I like havoc.
Big part of the Eagles' persona. That's 7 division titles in 14 years for Andy Reid. 5 times he gets to the NFC Championship game. Now, this is our final Chiefs Live until camp. We'll be working to get ready because once we hit camp, we're going to hit it on a full sprint, and you will see action every day from Chiefs Live from St. Joe's. So we're going to get ready for that. But we also are going to bring you something a little bit special as we transition here into the next part of the summer, and that is the Chiefs Cheerleader Calendar Special. We saw Bob Sutton, and that's going to be on KSMO. That's going to be Saturday night at 9:30. And, of course, the Chiefs this year went to the Virgin Islands, St. Thomas, St. John, to do their calendar shoot. What a great squad. Stephanie Judah is unbelievable. She's just unparalleled as what she does as coach of this cheer squad. But big part of the action is beach football. Okay, I like Bob Sutton. I was trying to emulate Bob Sutton. It didn't work out so well. We got beat 28-7, Kevin Lockett. Through for like 350 yards, former Chiefs wide receiver. But I couldn't rush Kevin Lockett. If I had Bob Sutton's scheme, Lockett would be on his butt, not throwing these deep post routes. You don't want to miss the Chiefs Cheerleader Special. You don't want to miss Kendall Gammon during training camp. Good call here. But as we go away today on this edition of Chiefs Live, just a taste of the Chiefs Cheerleader Calendar Special.
The best part of the week, hands down, is on Thursday afternoon. We send everybody down onto the beach, our sponsors, all the cheerleaders, and we have 2 former Chiefs players with us, so Kevin Lockett and Keith Cash, and then we also had Mitch Holtis with us.
This is what we're talking about. This is going to be the Bob Sutton Cover 2 man under defense. That's what we're going to run. We got great kids.
And the 3 of them, they divide out our team. So they go through some drills, they kind of learn some of their plays, and then you want to talk about some competitive women? Well, there it is. These girls, they don't want to lose. They are winners. Hands down, even though we said no tackling, I think I saw some tackling on that beach. It was an awesome afternoon to really kind of just finish up the trip.
Chiefs on 3, 1, 2, 3, Chiefs!